There is a particular kind of silence on a rail trail that is not really silence. It is more like a wide, patient layering of small sounds. Gravel shifting underfoot. A distant bird giving one note and then thinking better of it. Leaves turning slightly in the air before the wind has fully arrived. Somewhere, if the trail is close enough to town, a truck backing up, or a dog deciding that something needs to be announced. And under all of that, almost below hearing, the steady fact of your own movement. Walking down a rail trail in barefoot shoes brings that movement closer. Not faster, not more athletic, just closer. The ground, which in ordinary shoes can feel like a general condition, becomes a sequence of small events. A pebble presses the ball of the foot. A patch of packed dirt feels cool and level. Fine gravel has a dry, shifting liveliness to it, like standing on a handful of uncooked rice. Mud, if there has been rain, gives slightly then releases, and the foot receives that information before the mind has decided what to call it. Barefoot shoes do not make you barefoot exactly. They are more like a thin layer of diplomacy between the foot and the world. Enough protection to keep the sharpest edges from becoming the whole story, but not enough to erase the conversation. The foot is still being spoken to, and the brain walking there is listening in a way it does not always have to listen. A rail trail is already an interesting place for this kind of attention, because it is a path made from an absence. Trains used to pass there, heavy, scheduled, loud, determined things. The ground was shaped for steel wheels and long distances. It was graded carefully, leveled just so, given a curve gentle enough for freight. Then, after the train stopped, the corridor remained, the rails were lifted, the ties removed, or buried, or left to rot in some places. The route became something slower. Bicycles, dogs, strollers, walkers, people moving at the speed of conversation or thought, so the body is walking along the ghost of a machine. And in barefoot shoes, the body may begin to notice that the old railroad bed is not as smooth as it first appears. The eye sees a path, but the foot finds hundreds of variations. There are hollows where water collects. The edges slope toward weeds. Roots interrupt the surface in shallow ridges. The gravel is finer in some stretches, coarser in others. A place that looks evenly beige is actually a scattered field of pressures, angles, textures, and little negotiations. The brain receives all of this through the feet. We often think of the brain as if it lives behind the eyes, as if it sits in the skull looking out, narrating things, making plans, remembering names, revising conversations from years ago, and of course it does some of that. But the brain is also profoundly involved in the ordinary business of balance, pressure, joint position, muscular adjustment, and the tiny predictions that let one step become another. The brain is not simply the organ of thought, it is the organ of not falling over. And walking is one of its great ongoing performances, so practiced that it seems almost beneath notice, yet so intricate that a robot can still look faintly uncertain doing it. Each step requires the body to become briefly unstable. You lean forward, one foot lifts, weight transfers, the ankle adjusts, the toes respond, the hips rotate slightly, the arms swing not as decoration but as part of the balancing act. Vision samples the way ahead. The inner ear reports acceleration and tilt, the skin reports contact, the muscles report stretch, and the brain is continually blending these streams into a moving sense of where you are. In a thick-soled shoe, some of the information from the ground is softened. It is not gone, but it arrives blurred. The shoe says, in effect, "Do not worry too much about the details, but I will average them for you." A barefoot shoe says something different. "Here are the details. You may want to pay attention." At first, that attention can feel almost too specific. If you are accustomed to cushioning, the rail trail becomes busy. Gravel is no longer background. The pads under the toes begin to identify individual stones. The arch feels the slight diagonal of a rut. The heel may object if it is asked to strike the ground too firmly. The calves, suddenly included in the matter, may have opinions. The small muscles of the feet, which might have been passengers for a long time, are invited into conversation. There can be an almost childlike quality to this rediscovery, though not necessarily an innocent one. More like finding an old radio in the attic and discovering that it still works, but the dial is sensitive. Move it a little, and you get static. Move it again, and a station appears. The soles of the feet are full of receptors. They are not merely slabs of skin for standing on. They are sense organs, dense with nerve endings that respond to pressure, vibration, stretch, and texture. Some receptors adapt quickly, reporting change. Others keep reporting steady pressure. Together, they help build a map of contact, where the weight is, what the surface is doing, how the body is oriented against gravity. This map does not need to become verbal. In fact, most of the time it works better if it does not. You do not have to think, now I will shift weight toward the outside of my right foot because the gravel slopes inward. The body does something more fluid. The nervous system makes an estimate. Muscles engage. The ankle stiffens or softens. The next step changes slightly. 1,000 almost decisions pass beneath language. And yet, when walking slowly enough, or when the shoes are thin enough, a little of this usually hidden intelligence rises toward awareness. You might notice, for example, that the left foot lands differently from the right. Perhaps one is quieter. Perhaps one finds the ground with curiosity, while the other seems to arrive with a small thud, as if it has been given a job and wants to finish it. This is not necessarily a problem. It is just a fact revealed by repetition. The trail becomes a long strip of paper on which the feet are writing their habits. After a while, the mind begins to change its pace. There is something about repeated footsteps that draws thought into rhythm. Not a strict rhythm, because natural walking has variations, but a recurring pulse. The brain seems to appreciate this. It can set down some of its sharper objects. It can let thoughts lengthen. On a rail trail, where the grade is gentle and the turns are wide, thinking may start to resemble the path itself. Long, gradual, not demanding constant correction. This may be one reason walking has always been friendly to reflection. The body is occupied, but not consumed. The world is changing, but not too quickly. There is enough stimulation to keep the mind from collapsing inward, and enough regularity to keep it from scattering. The feet keep asking small questions of the ground, and the brain keeps answering without ceremony. In barefoot shoes, the questions are simply more tactile. Is this safe? Is this level? How much give is here? What touched the outer edge of the heel? Should the next step shorten? Can the toes spread? What is that coolness? The answers come as adjustments, not sentences. And perhaps this is why walking this way can make the mind feel less like a separate chamber and more like part of a larger loop. Brain, foot, gravel, balance, vision, memory, breeze. The boundaries become harder to locate. The sensation is not only in the foot, because the foot's message is taken up by the spinal cord, the cerebellum, the sensory cortex, the motor system, the vestibular system, the little background processes of prediction and correction. Nor is the sensation only in the brain, because the brain's expectations travel back down into the body, changing the tension in the calf, the angle of the ankle, the timing of the next step. A walk is not something the brain commands from above. It is something the brain and body and path do together. That phrase, in the brain, can sound as if experience is locked inside the skull, as if the rail trail is reconstructed somewhere in darkness, and the actual trail is separate from the private cinema of sensation. There is some truth in that. The brain does build models. It does infer the world from signals. It never touches gravel directly. It receives nerve impulses, patterns, changes in firing rates. What we experience as the roughness of a stone is, at one level, a biological translation. But if one stays too long with that idea, it can make perception feel lonely, as if the world were always at one remove. Walking complicates that loneliness, because even if the sensation is constructed in the brain, it is constructed in response to the world, and tested against the world, and corrected by the next contact with the world. If the brain predicts firm ground and the foot sinks into mud, the prediction changes immediately. If it expects a smooth surface and finds a root, the body answers before embarrassment can form. Perception is not a picture hung in a private room. It is more like an ongoing handshake. The ground pushes, the foot receives, the brain guesses, the body adjusts, the next patch of ground replies. On a rail trail, this exchange can continue for miles. And because the trail is former railroad, there is often a peculiar straightness to it. Not always, but often. It may run between trees in a way that feels unusually purposeful for a footpath. Natural trails wander with terrain, with water, with animal logic, with the convenience of avoiding boulders. Rail trails have inherited the old commitment to destination. Even when they pass through woods, they seem to remember that they once connected towns, mills, depots, warehouses, farms. They carry a kind of historical intention. This can produce an odd mixture in the walker. The body moves slowly through a corridor designed for speed and weight. The feet feel pebbles where iron wheels once hammered along. A bridge that once held freight now holds a person, noticing the way the wind is colder over water. The brain may drift between the immediate pressure under the toes and the imagined sound of trains, between touch and history. There are places on some rail trails where old telegraph poles still lean along the edge, or where the stone ballast is visible beneath the newer surface. Even if nothing remains, the geometry remains. A long cut through a hill, an embankment over a marsh, a straight passage through second-growth trees. The past has become topography. The foot does not know this history in a scholarly way. It does not say, here's a remnant of 19th-century transportation infrastructure. It says, this gravel is loose. But the brain can hold both, the immediate and the imagined, the pebble and the vanished train, the sensation arriving from the soul and the story rising from the landscape. This layering is one of the pleasures of walking slowly enough. The world stops being a single thing. A patch of sunlight on the trail is warmth on the skin, but it is also a gap in the canopy, which is also a result of a tree falling years ago, which is also habitat for blackberry canes, which is also a place where insects gather, which is also something the eye notices before the foot reaches it. When the foot arrives, the ground there may be drier, slightly dustier, looser. The brain folds the visual expectation into the tactile reality. A sunlit patch looks warm and then feels warm, and the match between expectation and sensation is quietly satisfying. Other times the world corrects you. A surface that looks soft is packed hard. A dark patch that appears muddy is only stained leaves. A smooth-looking place is scattered with tiny sharp stones, and the feet begin choosing more carefully. These little corrections are not dramatic, but they are intimate. They remind the brain that seeing is not the same as knowing. The ground must be met. Barefoot shoes encourage this meeting. There is also the matter of toes. In ordinary life, toes are often treated as a sort of collective, five small appendages at the end of the foot, often cramped, occasionally injured against furniture. But on a trail, in shoes that allow them room, toes become more individual. They spread slightly when weight comes forward. They grip, not like fingers, but with a subtle pressure. The big toe in particular has a dignified importance. It helps with push-off. It stabilizes. It participates in balance more than one might expect from something so often ignored. The brain has a map of the body, sometimes called the homunculus, though that word has an odd little gremlin feeling to it. In the sensory cortex, different regions correspond to different parts of the body, and the size of each region has less to do with physical size than with sensitivity and importance. Hands and lips are enormous in this map. Feet are there too, receiving their strange and constant news from the ground. The map is not fixed like a printed atlas. It changes with use. Musicians, dancers, craftspeople, anyone who spends years refining certain sensations and movements may alter the brain's representation of those parts of the body. Experience leaves traces. Repetition teaches the nervous system what to attend to. So a person who begins walking often in thin shoes may not simply be toughening the feet, though the skin and muscles may change. They may also be refining perception. The brain may become better at interpreting the small signals rising from the sole. The difference between harmless pressure and dangerous sharpness becomes clearer. Balance improves not as a grand achievement, but as a quieter fluency. The trail becomes more legible, and legibility changes the feeling of a place. A forest is different when you know the names of a few trees. A piece of music is different when you can hear the bass line. A trail is different when the ground is not just hard or soft, but full of distinctions. Fine dust over packed earth, damp leaves over hidden stone, gravel that rolls, gravel that locks together, a wooden bridge with a faint spring in the boards, asphalt warmed by afternoon, the hollow thud of a culvert beneath the path. The foot reads, and the brain in its own way learns the language. It is tempting to make this sound wholesome, as if the meaning of the walk, or that modern life has separated us from the ground and barefoot shoes restore some lost authenticity. There may be a little truth there, but it is too tidy. Human beings have been putting things on their feet for a very long time. Sandals, moccasins, boots, wrappings, wooden clogs, felt, leather, fiber. Protection is not a modern corruption. It is an old intelligence. The ground can be cold, sharp, contaminated, burning hot, full of thorns. Feet are sensitive because sensitivity is useful, and sensitivity also needs care. So the interest is not in purity, it is in degree. How much of the world do we want the shoe to translate away? How much do we want to receive? On some days a thick soul is a kindness, on others a thinner soul lets the path speak in a more detailed voice. The brain is always negotiating such filters. Sunglasses change light, headphones change sound, gloves change touch, cars change distance, screens change social presence. A shoe is one of the simplest and oldest filters, but also one of the most constant. It lives at the boundary between movement and earth. To change that filter is to change the walk. One may start noticing posture. In thin shoes, a heavy heel strike on gravel can feel abrupt, even jarring. The body may shorten its stride. The foot may land more gently, perhaps more toward the midfoot, though people vary. The knees soften. The torso finds a different balance. Rather than reaching ahead with the leg and pulling the body forward, one may feel more like placing the foot beneath the body and rolling through the step. This is not a rule. It is an observation. The ground gives feedback, and the body experiments. The brain enjoys experiments when they are not too threatening. It is constantly predicting sensory consequences. If I step here, this will happen. If I shift there, that will happen. Much of movement depends on prediction. Without it, the world would be too slow to navigate. Nerve signals take time. Muscles take time. If the brain waited passively for every result before making the next decision, walking would become clumsy and late. Instead, it anticipates. It sends motor commands and also prepares for the sensations those commands should produce. When the expected sensation arrives, all is well. When it does not, learning occurs. This is one reason uneven ground can be so absorbing. It provides a steady flow of mild surprise, nothing catastrophic usually, just enough variation to keep the nervous system awake. The trail says, not quite there, a little softer, now careful, now easy, now a stone, now a dip. The brain updates. The body becomes less like a machine repeating a motion and more like an animal moving through a place. That word animal is worth keeping for a moment. Walking in barefoot shoes can make the human body feel a little less abstract. Not primitive, not romantic, just animal in the plain sense. A living creature with weight, joints, skin, balance, hunger, fatigue, curiosity. A creature whose thoughts are influenced by blood sugar and weather and the angle of the light. A creature that makes contact with the earth through two complicated structures evolved from fins, altered over unimaginable time, and now enclosed in flexible fabric and rubber, moving along the remains of an industrial corridor. There is something gently comic about that, and also beautiful. The brain, for all its elaborate capacities, remains involved in ancient matters. Where is the ground? Can I stand here? What is underfoot? How do I get from this place to that one? Even while thinking about memory, or language, or the future, it is still answering those older questions. It may be composing an email in imagination, while also calculating the friction of damp leaves. Sometimes, on a long enough walk, verbal thought begins to thin out. Not disappear, but loosen. Sentences arrive and pass without demanding to be completed. A memory appears, connected perhaps to the smell of wet stone or the rhythm of walking, and then another memory attaches itself. The mind wanders, but the body's movement gives the wandering a current. This is different from sitting still with one's thoughts. Sitting can make thoughts pool. Walking lets them circulate. A worry may arise, but it is carried forward step by step, passing trees, passing fence posts, passing the same sort of gravel, but never quite the same gravel. The world keeps offering alternatives to rumination. The sound of bicycle tires approaching from behind. The sudden need to move slightly to the right. Barefoot shoes add small interruptions that are not quite interruptions. They are reminders. A sharp pebble under the metatarsal. A cooler patch in shade, a slight ache in a toe that has been working. These sensations return attention to the present, but not in a forced or ceremonial way, more like someone quietly clearing their throat. Here, this step, this surface, and then thought continues, but changed by that contact. One of the more interesting things about sensation is that it is never purely present. The brain mixes it with memory. The feel of gravel may recall a driveway from childhood, or a campsite, or the sound of someone walking outside a window. The smell of crushed leaves may bring back a season more than a specific event. The body remembers places without naming them. A certain kind of damp air on the skin can open a whole corridor of association. So walking down the rail trail, the brain is not only processing the current trail, it is comparing, echoing, anticipating. The present footstep contains previous footsteps. The body knows in some quiet archive other paths it has walked. sidewalks after rain, beaches where the sand pulled at the calves, cold kitchen floors at night, summer grass, stairs, hospital corridors, hotel carpets, the uneven boards of an old porch. Every new surface joins the collection. Maybe this is part of why walking can feel so richly ordinary. It is one of the first freedoms many people remember, though not consciously, the early triumph of crossing a room upright, the world suddenly reachable. Later, walking becomes background. We walk to the sink, to the mailbox, across parking lots, through airports, down hallways, but a trail restores walking as an experience in itself, not just a means of reaching the next object. Barefoot shoes sharpen that restoration by making each step less anonymous. At some point, if the walk is long enough, fatigue enters. Not dramatic fatigue, but a softening of the initial brightness. The calves may feel warmer, the soles may be more sensitive, the brain's attention may become less crisp, but more diffuse. The trail ahead appears in segments. Reach the bend, reach the bridge, reach the patch where the trees open. The body begins to measure distance, not in miles, but in sensations. How much spring remains in the step, how the hips feel, whether the shoulders have risen without permission. Fatigue changes perception. A pebble that was interesting at the beginning may become annoying later. The same thin sole that allowed conversation with the ground may now feel like too much honesty. This too is information. The nervous system does not encounter the world from a neutral state. It brings its own condition. A rested brain and a tired brain walk different trails, even on the same path. The evening version of the rail trail is different again. As light lowers, vision yields some authority. Shadows make texture harder to judge. The feet may become more important, or at least more consciously trusted. The air cools close to the ground. The smells of soil and leaves become stronger. The thin shoe transmits not only pressure but temperature, especially if the surface changes from sun-warmed dust to shaded dampness. The brain, receiving less certainty from the eyes, leans into other senses. There is a lovely humility in this. Vision usually dominates human experience so thoroughly that other senses become supporting cast. But walking in dim light or on varied ground reminds the brain that knowledge is distributed. The foot knows something the eye does not. The inner ear knows something neither eye nor foot can know alone. The skin on the face knows wind direction. The ears know the bicycle before it appears. A self, then, is not a little person in the head. It is more like a temporary agreement among senses, memories, intentions, and surroundings. Walking makes that agreement visible, or rather feelable. On the way back, if it is an out-and-back walk, the same trail is not the same. This is always mildly surprising. The view reverses. Slopes reveal themselves. A stretch that felt flat one way may show a slight incline in the other direction. The feet meet stones from new angles. Landmarks appear with different meanings. The old railroad line, though fixed in space, becomes two experiences depending on direction. The brain is directional too. It encodes routes not only as maps, but as sequences. First the bridge, then the long straight section, then the road crossing, then the curve by the wetland. Turn around, and the sequence must be rewritten. Familiarity becomes slightly estranged. Perhaps that is one of the quiet gifts of a walk, the chance to be both at home and not entirely at home, to move through a place simple enough to relax into, but detailed enough to keep revealing itself. Barefoot shoes intensify this by making the ordinary ground less generic. They lower the volume of separation. Not eliminate it, just lower it. And after the walk, when the shoes come off, the sensations often continue. The soles may buzz faintly, the calves may hum, the brain retains an afterimage of texture, not visual but tactile, as if the trail were still passing underneath. Standing on a kitchen floor can feel strangely smooth, almost silent. Carpet becomes plush, tile becomes cool and absolute. The body carries the rail trail indoors for a while. This lingering is interesting. Experience does not end cleanly when the event ends. The nervous system has inertia. It continues to process, integrate, settle. Just as the eyes may hold the shape of brightness after looking away, the feet may hold the memory of gravel. The brain, having spent an hour interpreting the ground, does not immediately stop listening. Maybe later in the evening, lying down, there is still a trace of the walk in the mind. Not a story exactly, more a rhythm, a sequence of pressures, a long corridor of trees, the soft logic of step after step. Thoughts may drift back to a certain bend in the trail, or to the brief discomfort of a sharp stone, or to the way the path crossed water and the air changed. And if one asks where the walk happened, the answer becomes pleasantly difficult. It happened on the rail trail, of course, on the gravel, under the trees, along the old grade. It happened in the feet, in the skin and joints and muscles. It happened in the spinal cord, the cerebellum, the sensory cortex, the shifting maps of the body. It happened in memory, where older paths woke up and joined it. It happened in the space between expectation and contact. It happened in the brain, but not only there. Or perhaps the brain during a walk is not quite the sealed organ we imagine. It is an organ of relation. It reaches outward through nerves, through movement, through attention. It makes a world from signals, yes. But those signals are made by touching, balancing, breathing, turning, hearing, remembering. The brain on a rail trail in barefoot shoes is not floating above the body. It is down there with the soles, negotiating gravel. And the gravel in its small way is part of the thought. Not as metaphor only, as pressure, as correction, as detail, as the next thing that must be felt before the next step can happen. This may be why such a walk can leave behind a quiet clarity, though clarity is almost too sharp a word. It is more like having been returned to scale. The mind, which can make enormous rooms out of worry and abstraction, spends time attending to small truths, a stone, a slope, a cooler patch of shade, the widening of toes, the shift of balance. Nothing is solved. Nothing needs to be. The world has simply been encountered at the speed of a human body. And somewhere in that encounter, the brain remembers that thinking is not only made of words, it is also made of footsteps.